This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisin and Noel Lim. 7:37 a.m, Tuesday the 11th of August. And in about half an hour, we're going to be having the Breakfast Grill, where Roshan, you'll be speaking with Dato' Doji Ming, Managing Director of Legenda Properties.
Yes, Legenda Properties is a Perak-based affordable housing player, or at least it is now. It was formerly known as DBE Gurney, which was a poultry business. And now they're shifting their sights away into the property sector. So I'll be getting into the rationale for this business change and a bit of the background behind how DBE Gurney has now become Legenda Property. So that's happening in half an hour.
All right, so be sure to stay tuned for that later on after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. But right now we're turning our sights over onto the international front, because Lebanon's government has stepped down as Prime Minister Hassan Diab blamed endemic corruption for a devastating explosion last week that tore through the capital. So President Michel Aoun has accepted Diab's resignation yesterday and asked the government to stay on in a caretaker capacity until a new cabinet is formed.
Tensions have certainly been boiling over in the country following the massive explosion at Beirut's port that killed more than 200 people and injured more than 6,000 and has left hundreds of thousands of people homeless. And this explosion was really a result of thousands of metric tons of ammonium nitrate, a chemical used in bomb making. It was left unattended and in unfavorable conditions at the port for nearly 6 years. And really the bigger issue here about Lebanon is gross corruption as well as governance mismanagement.
Yeah, so I think the official estimate is that the explosion caused more than $3 billion in damages, and that really does leave Lebanon's collective economic losses that could amount to $15 billion. So these are some of the concerns there, right? Especially on the back of the fact that you've had the COVID-19 pandemic before this, which has not helped things at all.
And not just the COVID-19 pandemic, Lebanon's also been struggling with a collapsed currency and a lack of access to basic services. So many of its citizens have taken to the streets in the last 2 days, demanding the government's resignation. So there's quite a bit to unpack here. And to help us do this, we have on the line James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. James, thank you so much for joining us. So now that the government has resigned, what happens next? Do you expect major changes to the power structure of the country?
I think you're going to see change. The question is how much and how fundamental. With other words, the government has resigned. What the protesters want, in a significant segment of the Lebanese population, is a government that is formed by people who have not been in power before and who are not associated with the political parties and organizations as they've emerged after the end of the civil war in 1990. To do that, you need two things. One is you need a new election law, and that will be up to parliament, which is basically populated by vested interests. And one will have to see whether or not parliament is willing to go that far. But the protesters so far, much like protesters elsewhere across the Arab world, have been very successful in exercising street power. But certainly they've learned from 2011 that they need to prepare for the aftermath of a change, with other words, the resignation of a government or of a leader. And it's not clear that the protesters in Lebanon are that far yet.
Well, as it stands, the parliament has representatives from political factions represented by religious groups and are said to be protecting their own interests through patronage networks. How do you even begin changing such a system and culture?
It's going to be tough, but I think there's one important thing here. Lebanon, in many ways, is the worst expression of problems that you're seeing throughout the Middle East. You've had protests in the Arab world, particularly if you look at the ones in Lebanon and in Iraq that started last year. One thing that characterized both of those protest movements was that the protesters wanted to go beyond the sectarian politics. They no longer were interested in politics along sectarian lines. And I think that that's going to be the crucial thing in Lebanon, because Lebanon was founded on the crux of its political system was a balance of power between various sects, religious, ethnic, whatever. And so changing that is going to be very difficult, but ultimately is the solution to Lebanon, as well as the Middle East larger problems, or one of the solutions.
Well, James, the blast has triggered a food security challenge for Lebanon as the country's main grain silo was destroyed and the port can no longer receive goods. What are your thoughts on the country's ability to solve this impending food crisis?
I think you're seeing an interesting development. So the aftermath of the explosion is twofold. An immediate humanitarian crisis in terms of food, in terms of the basics needed for life, including housing, utilities, and you have a structural economic problem, a collapse that precedes the explosion last week. The response, what's being demanded by the protesters, and the response of the international community is interesting in the sense that what the international community has said, we will provide humanitarian aid. We're not going to provide it through the government. We're going to provide it through civil society, including the Lebanese Red Cross and other non-governmental organizations. If you want structural aid to repair the government, you are going to have to introduce political and economic reform. And I think that that indeed bolsters chances that you're going to see some process of reform. Reform's not going to be overnight. It's going to have to be a process.
Now, James, public debt to GDP in Lebanon is also the third highest in the world. A quarter of its population who can work have no jobs. Another third lives in poverty. So against the backdrop of this latest development, what would give the Lebanese people hope?
I think the first thing that will give them hope is a flow of humanitarian aid. And indeed humanitarian aid that does not go through the coffers of the government, but go through civil society. That's obviously going to be addressed and hopefully will help address the most immediate problems, food security, utilities, housing, and so forth. The fact that if the international community sticks to its guns and says to the Lebanese government, whoever that may be after yesterday's resignation, we will only help you if you help yourself, I think that too will provide a degree of hope, because this is, of course, a situation that is unsustainable in the short term even.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, James. That was James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute, kind of shedding some light on the difficulties faced on the ground in Lebanon amidst all of the international attention as a result of the explosion in Beirut. And I think one of the issues that has also been highlighted when it comes to humanitarian aid is there does appear to be some mistrust of particularly the UN, who appeared to have close ties with the government. So James's solution there of humanitarian aid funds channeling through not through the coffers of the government will probably go some ways to solve that.
Yeah, and it's a tough situation, right? Because now you've got I think James pointed out, now the government has resigned. So who is going to be handling the situation from here on out? That's the question that remains to be seen.
Yes, I think I understand it's a caretaker government at this point. I think it's still run by the Prime Minister for the time being. So hopefully the humanitarian assistance would be helpful. And, you know, but we understand in Lebanon, there's just corruption at all levels, right? So,
it definitely does.
We can only hope the best for them.
It definitely does remain to be seen. But right now, we have some messages coming up for you. And then up next, we'll be speaking with Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute, on the political impact of charges against Lim Guan Eng. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.